Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Ask not.
The Beatles.
Those circuses on the air.
When the president does it,
sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
China's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Dave Plyer is off tonight. It's Dolly McCarthy in the studio with my pal, history buff Dave Schwann from the WGN Newsroom. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Dolly. Good to see you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, I think about 4 years now.
Something like that, yeah.
You and I were together at the, it was the morning show, Dean Richards' morning show, the old Trump Tower.
At a place at 435 North Michigan Avenue.
So nice to be reunited with you. All right, good times.
Yes.
Every week, you and Dave Plyer talk about things of a historical nature in Chicago and around the world, and we're going to keep that going. Let's get right to it. By the way, everybody, I've got cheat sheets in front of me, but Dave, as you know, he's got it all in his head. I just don't know anybody knows history better
than
you, Dave Schwann.
We'll see.
All right. Ready to get to it, Dave?
Go ahead.
1620, on December 18th, 1620, the British ship Mayflower lands at modern-day Plymouth, Massachusetts, and its passengers prepare to begin their new settlement, Plymouth Colony. Did you cover that, Dave?
No, not quite. I was there at 1621. Which was they stayed for a year, and then they had the first what has now become Thanksgiving, as thankful, of course, for a great harvest and a great crop and a safe landing here. But that's a wonderful area to this day to go and visit and see.
My bucket list.
It's on your bucket list.
I bet you've been there.
I've been there many years ago. I was there when I was a kid on a family vacation. Uh-huh. But, been through New England here in recent years, but saw other parts of New England we hadn't seen. So we didn't go to Plymouth and see the rock, by the way, I think was something that was made later. But it kind of marks, more or less a landing point.
All right, 1865, following its ratification by the requisite three-quarters of the states earlier in the month, the 13th Amendment is formally adopted into the U.S. Constitution, ensuring that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Amen. Huh?
Amen, yes. And Abraham Lincoln sadly did not live to see that. He worked so hard to get that through and to get that amended to the Constitution, and of course, he was assassinated in April of that year. Every time we talk about something like this, Dolly, I always think back to another really a sad story. That one of the original copies of the Emancipation Proclamation that Lincoln himself wrote was lost in the Great Chicago Fire.
No way.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
It was here in the archives of, I guess, what is now the Chicago History Museum, the Historical Society of the time, and among the many artifacts that we lost in the fire, that was one of them.
Oh, that is such a shame.
We lost an original copy of that.
Something else. Yep. All right, 1888, on December 23rd, 1888, Dutch painter Vincent van Gogh, suffering from severe depression, cuts off the lower part of his left ear with a razor while staying in Arles, France. Am I pronouncing that right?
Arles. No S. Arles.
Okay, Arles, yeah. France. He later documented the event in a painting titled Self-Portrait with a Bandaged Ear. Love the title there. Today, Van Gogh is regarded as an artistic genius. We all know that. And his masterpieces sell for record-breaking prices. However, during his lifetime, can you believe this? He was a poster boy for tortured, starving artists and sold only one painting.
Yes, one painting. Have you ever seen the one where he's bandaged up? It looks like the classic old toothache with the big bandage around the head.
Yes, where have I seen that painting?
In books or on TV.
It's not at the Art Institute, though.
I don't know if that one is, but one of the originals that they have at the Art Institute, let's hope we can go in there next year to is a painting you mentioned, Arles. Is the bedroom at Arles, an original Van Gogh. Now, since I'm glad you brought up Van Gogh, because I'm excited next year to see this immersive Van Gogh. Have you seen anything about this on TV? Where it's going to be a multimedia, high-tech presentation where you can actually walk around, virtual reality type of thing of Van Gogh's painting. It's coming here to Chicago. I've seen ads for tickets, and I've discussed it with a good friend of mine who might be interested in going to see it, but I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, I'll join you.
Immersive Van Gogh. Okay, let's make it a party.
Who do you give his ear to? That's what I want to know. I heard of someone at a brothel, a cleaning lady at the brothel.
A lady friend and was upset about that, and I understand that, if I'm correct on that, he was going to give it to her,
All right. I know you talked about this with Dave last week, but I'm so fascinated by this because I grew up in Chicago, born and raised, never heard of this Chicago tragedy that happened back in 1912. A Coast Guard icebreaker carrying 1,200 Christmas trees intended for poor families in Chicago docks every year at Navy Pier and continuing a tradition laced in joy and tragedy that began more than a century ago. In the late 1800s, early 1900s, the three-mast Rouse Simmons carried trees offered at a price affordable to Chicago's working poor, or free if people couldn't pay. At its helm was Herman Schunemann, a big-hearted merchant who was proud to be known as Captain Santa. The yearly arrival of the ship with the tree strapped to the top at its main mast was highly anticipated. Then the boat sank during a storm while headed to Chicago on November 23rd, 1912. Crowds gathered around the lakefront in Chicago, didn't know it. No cell phones back then.
Right.
They waited in vain. And when the boat didn't arrive, a sad little girl in the crowd told her father, "Without Christmas trees, there's no Christmas." A newspaper reporter heard the exchange and used the quote from the girl. Her name was Ruthie Flesvig. The sinking of the Christmas ship became the stuff of Lake Michigan lore and 78 years later captured the imaginations of a group of Chicago sailors who wrote a script and turned it into a play. Crazy how, born and raised in Chicago, never heard of this story.
You never knew that story, yeah, right.
Wow.
Well, there's a lot of things out there that, you don't hear of. You pay more attention to other things, and, that was over a century ago. There's a lot of shipwrecks because of the storms on the Great Lakes.
I kind of feel like we need to have a statue of Ruthie and a Christmas tree over there now.
There should be some sort of a marker there,
All right, more history with my pal Dave Schwann. It's Dolly McCarthy in for Dave Plyer on 720 WGN.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. That if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Dolly McCarthy here in for Dave Plyer, along with Dave Schwann in the studio. We're talking a little history this week. All right, Dave, 1917. On December 19th, 1917, four teams of the National Hockey League play in the league's first two games. At the time of its inception, the NHL was made up of five franchises: the Canadiens and the Wanderers, both of Montreal, and the Ottawa Senators, the Quebec Bulldogs, and the Toronto Arenas, known at the time as the Toronto Hockey Club. The Montreal teams won two victories that day as the Canadiens beat Ottawa 7-4 and the Wanderers triumphed over Toronto 10-9. What I want to know, what was the first U.S. NHL team.
I was going to say.
That's really interesting.
You were talking about Canadian teams. I was waiting to see something about a young up-and-coming team in the Midwest named the Blackhawks. But
do you remember or do you know the first U.S. team? Did you ever go to one of those first games, Dave? I'm teasing you. I'm only kidding with you.
No. No, I do not know the first.
No way! You know some. You don't know something that I do know.
Something I don't know. Okay.
The Boston Bruins.
Thank you.
I looked it up. I'm cheating. All right. 1923 on December 24th, 1923, President Calvin Coolidge touches a button and lights up the first national Christmas tree to grace the White House grounds. Not only was this the first White House community Christmas tree, but it was the first to be decorated with electric lights.
Yeah. You know, we take it for granted. Electricity was pretty common, you know, but think of this. There were a fair amount of rural areas in the United States that did not have electricity that was provided by a giant, you know, utility company like a ComEd or something like that. And so still having an electric tree, electric lights, that was kind of a big deal. I know... somehow or other, I think it was my aunt or great aunt or my grandmother showed me a list of wedding presents that my dad's parents got in the early years of the 20th century. Someone gave them a lamp for a wedding present, and the word electric was underlined big time. You know, that was a big deal. So, yeah, 1923, and to have that many lights on one tree at one time.
Yeah, 2,500 red, white, and green bulbs on that tree. The balsam fir came from Coolidge's home state of Vermont and stood 48 feet tall. Several musical groups performed at the tree lighting ceremony, including the Epiphany Church Choir and the U.S. Marine Band. Later that evening, President Coolidge and First Lady Grace were treated to carols sung by members of Washington, D.C.'s first congressional church. Almost 100 years ago, Dave.
Yeah, 1923. Wow.
How tall do you think the tree is this year, the national tree at the White House?
Oh, no idea. I would imagine it would be the same size, you know, comparably, you know. Not sure.
Wasn't even sure. I couldn't even find the state that it came from.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Right. We get focused on where the tree comes from here in Chicago. that is now here in Millennium Park. Looks nice, by the way.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Nice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. 1968, also coming up this week, Apollo 8, the first manned mission to the moon, successfully launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida, with astronauts Frank Borman, James Lovell Jr., and William Anders aboard.
1968. I'll always, always, always remember Christmas Eve watching the broadcast of those three reading from the book of Genesis in the Bible live on TV.
You do? Wow.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
I was a twinkle in my dad's eye.
But I do remember that. And it really, well, I'll just have to say it just seems so appropriate.
December 21st, 1968. The men aboard Apollo 8 are no joke. About to go where no man's gone before. The crew, rookie Bill Anders, along with space veterans Frank Borman and Jim Lovell, knew their mission was risky business. NASA's first flight to the moon.
I thought I had one chance in three of a successful flight, and then one chance in three of not surviving.
3, 2, 1, 0.
The Saturn V rocket thrust the crew first into Earth's orbit and then fired them on a path to the moon. Once in lunar orbit, Anders' assignment was to shoot photos of the moon's surface. And on the crew's third pass, Commander Frank Borman tweaked the position of the spacecraft.
All right, we're going to roll.
It was in the turning around, looking forward process when I saw this thing coming out of the corner of my eye in the window. It turned out it was the Earth.
God, look at that picture over there. There's the Earth coming up. Wow, isn't that pretty?
When the Earth came up over the lunar horizon, that's when it really impressed me as to how much more delicate the Earth was and colorful.
First mission closest to heaven, right? There we go. That was appropriate, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, 1978, 42 years ago this week. Police in Des Plaines, Illinois, arrest John Wayne Gacy for murder, Although he maintained his innocence, he was found guilty in 1980 and given multiple death penalty and life sentences. In 1994, he was executed by lethal injection. Now, that I do remember watching.
Yes, oh yes. Yeah, I was just starting out in broadcasting when that happened, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you cover that story at all?
No. I wasn't here in Chicago yet. But, boy, when that happened, when that story broke, that was big, big news.
Nationwide,
yeah, oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So you probably at least read the report
on that.
Well,
I was in the area here, but, mm-hmm. Certainly watching Chicago TV that evening, about the arrest and everything, and then, solving cases of the missing children that were involved, tragically.
Yeah. Some of them we're finding out within the last 10, 15 years,
mm-hmm.
they've linked some of these young men to it.
Yep.
2020.
Interesting times in which we live.
It sure is. 2020 has been an interesting year. Let's go to 2020 right here. While most Christmas songs prior to 1930 were a traditional religious character, the Great Depression era of the 1930s brought a stream of songs of American origin, most of which did not explicitly reference the Christian nature of the holiday, but rather the more secular, traditional Western themes and customs associated with Christmas. These included songs aimed at children such as Santa Claus is Coming to Town,
right.
and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer,
right.
as well as sentimental ballad-type songs performed by famous crooners of the era. Such as Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and White Christmas.
That's true.
Which, as of today, remains the best-selling single of all time.
Yeah,
sung by
Irving Berlin's great song. Bing Crosby's version.
See, everyone knows Bing Crosby, but Dave Schwann knows Irving Berlin wrote that.
Song, yeah.
Well, I do remember that. Yeah. Most, but I don't know if the young youngsters today.
He also wrote God Bless America, too.
He did?
Yes.
I want some every day from you, Dave Schwann. What would we do without you? Any other bits and information and facts up there you want to spew out for us today?
Well, in relation to White Christmas and then Irving Berlin, not really. Irving Berlin was either he was born in Russia or his parents were. He was first-generation American. Made it to the age of 100.
Wow.
Yeah, he lived to be 100, 101 or something like that. Wrote some classic American tunes. White Christmas, God Bless America, everybody knows those.
Yes, indeed. All right, that's going to do it for me. What a fantastic time we've had together. Thanks for listening, everybody. And special thanks to Dave Schwann, Steve Ruxton in News, and producer Curtis Coe, and Brendan Brook. Dave Blyer, if you're listening, thanks for inviting me to fill in for you tonight. Dave will be back next week. I am Dolly McCarthy. Happy holidays, everybody. So long, and be good. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.